Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI invites the faithful to be more willing and radical in responding to a call from Christ. Pope Benedict XVI leads preparatory celebrations for the feast of Rome's patron saints, Peter and Paul. We hear of a group of men preparing for ordination after an intense 4 years of study here in the Eternal City. And Peter Malone tells us about a polished remake of a popular 1980s horror film that delves into the evil of sex abuse on children. On the last Sunday of the month, dedicated to the Sacred Heart, Pope Benedict XVI invited the faithful to be more willing and radical in responding to a call from Christ. The Pope's comments came on Sunday in a short address before praying the midday Angelus with crowds gathered in St. Peter's Square, which he dedicated to the theme of Christ's call and its demands. Charles Collins has this report.
In his Angelus on Sunday, Pope Benedict XVI returned to the theme of Christ's call and its demands. He said these can appear harsh, but in reality they express the newness and absolute priority of the kingdom of God, which comes into being in the person of Jesus Christ himself. The Pope explained to the thousands of people gathered in St. Peter's Square that those who give up everything, even themselves, to follow Jesus, enter a new dimension of freedom, one that St. Paul calls living by the Spirit.
Libertà e amore coincidono. Al contrario, obbedire al proprio egoismo conduce a rivalità e conflitti.
He said, freedom and love are one and the same. By contrast, obeying one's own selfishness leads to rivalries and conflicts. He also spoke about this week's feast marking Saints Peter and Paul.
On Tuesday of this week, we will be celebrating Rome's feast days, that is to say, the feast of Saints Peter and Paul, two great apostles who proclaimed the gospel in this city and bore witness to Christ, even to the shedding of their blood. Through their prayers, may all who came on pilgrimage to Rome be renewed and strengthened in faith, hope, and love.
Finally, in his Polish greetings, the Holy Father talked about the summer holiday season, which is just around the corner for many people.
Zbliża się okres wakacji dla wielu będzie to czas.
He said that he hopes these encounters with nature, new people, and the fruits of human creativity are not just an occasion for the recovery of physical strength and intellectual development, but also a more intense encounter with God and a strengthening of faith. I'm Charles Collins.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report. I happen to live very close to the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls, and for the past few days, it has been impossible to pass by without getting caught up in the feverish preparations for one of the City of Rome's most heartfelt festivities. June the 29th, in fact, marks the feast day of St. Peter and Paul, patron saints of the Eternal City. Much of the focus is on the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls. I asked Benedictine monk Edmund Power, the abbot of the monastery of St. Paul's outside the walls, to tell me why.
Everybody thinks of St. Peter, of course, because that's where the Holy Father is. But we down here at St. Paul's outside the walls, where we have the shrine of St. Paul, and we have a big celebration as well. That celebration on the liturgical level is done over a period of 3 days, a triduum, so that we prepare more profoundly spiritually for the feast itself, which is the 29th of June.
On the second day, he told me, they have the ecumenical Vespers.
This is a custom we began in recognition of our ecumenical a responsibility, which we want to do anyway, but was given by the Pope in a formal way to us. We try, in any big celebration, we try always to include an ecumenical dimension. So traditionally now, on this second day, instead of having a Mass in the evening, we have ecumenical Vespers, which means that we celebrate, it's not our Vespers with participants, but it's four different ecclesial groups celebrating together. So we have the Orthodox communities with us, the Anglicans, the Lutherans of Rome, and also, obviously, the monks and our normal faithful in the Basilica.
And then, the abbot said, the Pope himself was at the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls to preside at the first Vespers of the Feast of the Solemnity in the evening.
And then the main feast itself is the 29th of June. In the evening, the abbot, myself, will celebrate the Pontifical Mass at the Papal Altar. Interesting also is our tradition of having the procession of the chains of St. Paul, which is a relic we've had in the Basilica from the beginning, first referred to in the 4th century by St. John Chrysostom. The chains of St. Paul are carried around the locality with a great throng of faithful. It's a rather unusual relic, but a very beautiful one. The chains are referred to at least 14 or 15 times in the New Testament, both in the letters of Paul and in the Acts of the Apostles. Obviously for him, they were the physical chains of his imprisonment, but more than that, he refers to them in a symbolic way as the chains of love between him and Christ that enable him to bear with joy and serenity his imprisonment and also to go to martyrdom.
For the Benedictine monks at St. Paul's outside the walls, these chains, Abbot Power explained, take on an added dimension.
We see them, we want to see them, as also the chains of love between Christians. And so we're trying to include non-Catholic Christians in our procession of the chains. It might seem a very Catholic devotion, carrying relics around the streets, and maybe not the sort of thing that Lutherans or Anglicans would want to do, but in fact we hope they'll come with us in this New Testament spirit of the symbolic meaning of the chains. So we'll be looking forward to that celebration as well. Gloria, alabanza,
your nome. I asked Father Power to tell me more about the relics themselves.
Yeah, the relics, nine links remain of the chain of St. Paul. There were 11, but Pope John Paul II decided to give two of the links to the Orthodox Archbishop of Athens as an ecumenical gift, because the Church of Athens considers St. Paul its apostolic founder. And that process took a bit of time to implement, but the Archbishop of Athens with his entourage came here, and at a very beautiful ceremony in which we prayed in Latin and in Greek, the two links were given to the Archbishop and now enshrined in Athens. So nine remain. In the 17th century, there were still 13 links. I don't know where the other two went in the meantime, but we're hoping that the Holy Father doesn't decide to give any more links to anyone. But anyway, they're in a reliquary, and that reliquary is taken out and carried on a platform by stalwart men. And we'll carry icons as well, and then all the faithful behind the monks, including some of the local parishes and people of the area. And we'll go around the streets. We have a slightly different route each year, singing and praying. And it's very popular in this part of the city. And I think people come from other parts as well. But it's not just a religious ceremony, because on the 28th and 29th, there's the big St. Paul's Fair outside the Basilica and Monastery, which blocks the Via Ostiense for a part of its distance, with stalls and all sorts of things. It's a big local Roman celebration.
And fireworks as well, I think, isn't it?
Well, there are always fireworks in Italy for everything.
As I mentioned, Pope Benedict XVI on Monday evening led the celebration of the first Vespers for the solemnity of the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul in the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls. And on Tuesday morning, at Mass in St. Peter's Square, the Pope will bestow the pallium on 38 archbishops appointed to metropolitan archdioceses during the course of the year. A delegation from the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, meanwhile, are here in Rome to take part in celebrations marking the feast of the martyrdom of the two apostles. Pope Benedict greeted them personally in private audience on Monday morning, welcoming progress in Catholic Orthodox dialogue. Charles Collins again has more.
The delegation from the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople is led by Metropolitan Gennadius and is in response to a visit to Istanbul earlier this year by a Holy See delegation for the Feast of St. Andrew. On Monday morning, the Holy Father greeted them in private audience. Speaking to them in English, he praised progress in Catholic Orthodox dialogue and asked for their close cooperation in the October Synod of Bishops for the Churches in the Middle East.
The difficulties that the Christians of the Middle East are experiencing are in large measure common to all, living as a minority and yearning for authentic religious freedom and for peace. Dialogue is needed with the Islamic and Jewish communities. In this context, I shall be very pleased to welcome the fraternal delegation, which the Ecumenical Patriarch will send in order to participate in the work of the Synodal Assembly.
The Catholic and Orthodox churches celebrate the feast of the martyrdom of the apostles Peter and Paul on the same day. It is one of the most ancient feasts on the liturgical calendar, and in the words of the Pope, it testifies to a time when our communities were living in full communion with one another. I'm Charles Collins.
And staying in the area, very close to the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls, is the Pontifical Beda College. Now, if you listen to my programme, I am sure you will have noticed that I often mention the Beda, as it's affectionately known, both because it's where Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright, who is a frequent collaborator of mine, resides, and because it is a source of interest and contacts for us English speakers here in Rome. Well, the college, its rector, Monsignor Roderick Strange, explains on its webpage, was first founded in 1852 to form elder men, often convert clergymen, for Catholic priesthood. They came here only for 4 years because they were seen to have significant knowledge and experience already. Today, Monsignor Strange continues, the character of the community has changed. Although the Beda remains the responsibility of the bishops of England and Wales, it has opened its doors to receive men from English-speaking countries worldwide. However, the essential mission remains the same, to help older men harness and develop their experience and knowledge in the service of the gospel as Catholic priests. And it is on some of these men that today Abbot Timothy Wright reflects, as many of them reach the end of their stay here in Rome and prepare to go out to serve the world, taking with them the Word of God.
June is always a good month in the liturgical year and in the year of formation, certainly in the Northern Hemisphere, because periods of training come to an end. And as many of you know, I'm a spiritual director at the Pontifical Beda College here in Rome. And it's always a happy moment at the end of the second semester in June when we see our students being ordained to the diaconate and to the priesthood. And in this particular year, and it's as we've just finished the year of the priest, it's nice to reflect on the eight candidates who will be ordained priest in this coming few weeks or months. Because they represent a sort of microcosm of the church. We have a Benedictine monk from Pecos in the United States who has been studying with us for 2 or 3 years, and he is going to be ordained out in Pecos in his monastery later on. And he will work in Pecos in New Mexico, doing some pastoral work and retreat work, I should imagine, in that area from that monastery. But then we move to Africa, and we have a wonderful man called Spencer Crewe, whose wife died, and he decided to go for the priesthood for the Bulawayo Archdiocese in Zimbabwe. And he is just completing his fourth year with us and was ordained deacon last year, and will go back in a couple of weeks' time to be a priest in the Bulawayo Archdiocese, and he will be ordained there. And that will be a wonderful moment for that diocese, and he's a courageous man, full of energy and faith, and will bring a lot of hope and love, and his deep prayerfulness will inspire a lot of people, I'm quite sure, in Bulawayo. Then we have another older man who's also going back to his country, which is Malaysia, to his diocese of Johor Bahru. He too was married, and his wife died, and after several years he decided to become a priest, and has had four very successful years here in the Beda, and will be ordained in end of June. And will be working again in their diocese in an area, Muslim country, where the church is small but still quite powerful, still quite strong voice. But nevertheless, it's a difficult time for them too. And so his ordination will be a wonderful addition for that diocese. And he will bring to it a clarity of thinking and a great insight into people, and a man of deep prayer. Moving to another continent, this time to Australia, we have two of our students are being ordained and for different dioceses of Australia, Armidale and Broome. In Armidale, John McHugh, who will be a priest, he's got, again, was married. His wife died relatively young, and his three sons are all grown men now and have been to visit him. Lots of friends have come to Rome to visit him from time to time over the last 4 years. And he will be ordained and take up his ministry in the Armidale parish with the great enthusiasm that he brings. And another Australian who's travelled quite a journey, John Purnell, is going to be ordained for the Diocese of Broome. And Broome is in the northern part of Australia, if I can call it that, and his great love is to work with the Aboriginal peoples, for which he has a gift and a breadth of vision and an energy which is quite remarkable. And he is a good mind, lively thinker, quite a radical thinker in some ways, but working in a very difficult pastoral situation, very different from the normal situation, but he will bring the love of God and a lot of considerations of how that love is applied in societies which are very different from that you not find in normal churches. And then we have another candidate who is going to be ordained for the Diocese of Gibraltar. And he was, in fact, he had a year out because of ill health, and rejoined this current year to finish his last year. And he's Deacon Derek Alvarez, and a small diocese, and he will be much valued there. He's a man whose homilies as deacon have been very inspirational, and he will be much, much appreciated, I'm sure, because of his deep faith and devotion. And then lastly, in England, we have two men who are being ordained, one for the Diocese of Salford, Anthony Sudlow, and one for the Diocese of Nottingham, Michael Williams. Anthony was married and wife died, so he decided to eventually, through a journey, join the Diocese of Salford, and he will bring to it a tremendously deep faith, and knowing that area well, he will bring an intuition into the way the people of Manchester and in that diocese and the cities to the north, which make up the Diocese of Salford. He will bring an insight into how they think and what it's like to earn your own keep, and his deep faith will be an example and an encouragement. Michael Williams, who comes from the southwest of England, worked for many, many years in Nottingham, and has decided after taking early retirement to be ordained priest. And he is a man of huge ability, and having held a big position, was able to speak well and speak coherently about the gospel, and his sermons are always very well prepared, very well organized, and yet always very practical and accessible to people. And I'm sure he will be a fine priest for the Nottingham Diocese. So that group of eight people, from very, very different backgrounds, all coming to the same college for 4 years of formation, now reaching its climax in their ordination as they depart from Rome and return to their diocese. It's a matter of thanksgiving. It's a matter of appreciating the wide range of people who are called to the Catholic priesthood and who have, from a lot of experience of having lived as lay people, to bring to their ministry in the church, and surely will be a gift. And it's a gift from God that these men have been inspired. It's a gift to the church at this moment when the numbers of vocations are not increasing. And it's a gift in the sense that so many of them are coming out of different vocations, having been married, having had experience of married life, or having worked for many years in professional jobs. And both those backgrounds will bring a richness to the priesthood, which is something that many, many people in the pews and the parishes they serve will appreciate. And that is a sign of God's blessing and something which we should be thankful for.
Over to my friend, film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he gives us The Creeps, with a polished remake of a popular 1980s horror film, which provides a monstrous iconic image of the evil of sex abuse and reflects on the terrible repercussions sex abuse has on children.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
Sounds very scary.
I had another nightmare last night. I can't tell what's real anymore. Is there anybody else out there that this is happening to?
Have you ever seen the original Nightmare on Elm Street?
No, I must confess. I always avoid that kind of film.
As I said, not your kind of film. Actually, in the 1980s, there were a lot of very popular horror films, starting in a way with John Carpenter's Halloween in 1978, and then Friday the 13th came out in 1980. So during the 1980s, quite a lot of American horror films where mainly young adults were the centre, and they got picked off one after the other in ever more gruesome ways. But somehow The Nightmare on Elm Street, which had six sequels, did capture the imagination, especially with its villain, Freddy Krueger, played by Robert Englund. And he had been burnt in a fire, so his face was disfigured. But he wore this pullover and hat, and he also had a glove with razor-sharp knives on the end instead of fingers. So I suppose an icon of terror. Anyhow, he's been revived, which is the reason why I mentioned Nightmare on Elm Street. So after 26 years, they're starting again.
Every time that I dream, there's always this man.
That's his mark, isn't it? Freddy.
Oh my God, you've seen him.
Now, there must have been some social reason for this production of horror films in the 1980s. Why do you think they're of interest right now?
There's been a whole revival, and they get much more publicised than they did, say, in the 80s. Amongst young people via internet and via clubs. And with the availability of DVDs, you know, you can see almost any horror film you want. And there is a tendency for them to go further and further over the top. So I found this remake of Nightmare on Elm Street much better. It's rather more polished than many of the other films, adequately acted, I suppose, although they've got a new actor for Freddy Krueger, Jackie Earl Haley, who isn't the most handsome actor in real life, so they're able to make him look rather sinister, and especially then with the traditional makeup. But in terms of social reasons that you mention, And why I thought it might be worth talking about is that they've shifted the attention from the 80s to now on the crimes of Freddy Krueger. But in the past, he had murdered children, and the parents took action vigilante-like against him and set him on fire and killed him, so that as a ghost, so to speak, in the young people's nightmares, he was a figure of terror. But they've done something more, and it's relevant because they've actually associated with all the discussions we have these days on the sexual abuse of children.
Who are you?
Remember me.
In what way does the film tackle this issue?
Well, I was surprised. I was expecting, I suppose, Freddy Krueger to be a bit like the one in the 80s. But in this one, they've written the screenplay that he actually is a sexual abuser of young children at a preschool. And what has happened is that, once again, the parents have actually taken the law into their own hands, chased him into a building and set it alight. So, once again, he is killed and burnt and disfigured. But the children have actually repressed their memories of any of the abuse, and the parents have been trying to get the children to repress their memories so that they'll be safe. But they've used the horror genre to say the repressed memories can surface again, and this time they surface in the form of making the molester demonic, a figure of horror who can kill them in their sleep.
It's me, it's you, it's Dean, it's Jesse, Chris.
It's in all of our heads, Nancy. We gotta stop this.
How?
Don't fall asleep.
So it's quite, I found it a fascinating, you know, as I was sitting back in the armchair, a fascinating image of the horrors that we're talking about, say in the media or in the court cases or in the institutions, but it's putting a horrible face on the abuser, making them a nightmarish figure who can still act destructively in the mind and in the unconscious of the child.
I haven't slept in 3 days.
We're running out of time.
At the 70-hour mark, the insomniac will begin to experience micro-naps. It means you're dreaming, but you don't know it. Even if you're awake.
And I'd be interested to hear whether other reviewers and other commentators take up that theme, but it's very strong, I thought, in the film.
Well, I'm happy to hear you can sit back in an armchair in a film that I'd be sitting on the edge and probably hiding underneath. But so you're saying it's actually a much deeper analysis of the phenomenon than the one made in the 80s.
Yes, the one in the 80s was, this is a terrible thing to say in a way, but conventional enough in it being a crime of murder. But these days, then, it is even more sinister, destroying the innocence of the child and the consequences then for the children as they grow up. So it's offering images and symbols and icons, I suppose, of a contemporary social problem that is vexing so many people today.
I'm going to give you a little something that'll put you right to sleep.
No, 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 no.
This might sting a bit.
No.
You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.